Welcome to the World of Horror Podcast, episode 102. I'm Mom.
And I'm Mac.
This is the podcast where we share our love of international horror. Fear is universal, but we are not afraid of subtitles.
Whoa, hoes!
Nice one.
Thank you.
This week it's Mac's pick of genre, and Mac has chosen Animals Run Amok movies. We reviewed The Birds from the U.S. and Black Sheep from New Zealand. Before we get into it, fair warning, these discussions will include spoilers and language which may not be suitable for all listeners. Let's move on to our first segment. Mom and Mac chat. Hi, Mac. How's it going?
Hi, Mom. It is going okay, I'd say. My pharmacy doesn't have my ADHD medication, so just raw dog in life right now.
Oh, no. Please don't ever say that again. Wow. On that note, one time somebody was picking up a chip and said that the 12-step program was the KY jelly. For life. Oh my God.
Yeah, I will say that's the kind of thing I would say is a joke to Alan. And I guess I just, my brain didn't connect the dots of like, I'm talking to my mom right now.
No. It's not because,
as I was saying it, I was like, no.
I actually don't even think it's a bad expression. I mean, it's very descriptive. It's just the word raw itself.
That is descriptive.
Not good for my brain.
That's fair. But anyways, I haven't had to go like a work day without my ADHD meds in like a long time. And lo and behold, it was very hard to concentrate. And then when I asked them like, hey, you know, when is it going to be there? They were like, I don't know. We ordered it. Like, how is that acceptable?
I know this has been happening since the pandemic because I have a lot of friends who take various ADD and ADHD medication. Mm-hmm. And I take it too, but just for another purpose. Anyway, yeah, what the fuck? You think we would have figured this out in the last 3 years?
Nope.
No. And my hormones are late. They're delayed every time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a monthly thing.
Yeah.
every month your prescription is due. And I hit the little button and it says it's delayed.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Well, I haven't even asked them about this, but I ordered more testosterone and like they haven't said anything. So I can only guess that it's also like, you know, out of stock. Because that happened the last time I refilled it. It's just like, well, what am I supposed to do then? Go fuck myself? Like, okay.
Well, you, I don't know if you can try other pharmacies.
That's what I'll end up doing if it takes too long.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, one of our best friends of the show, you know, that happened, I think, at the holidays out of state for her. And that was not great.
That sounds not fun.
No.
How are you?
Fine. I've been sleeping a lot, which is never a good sign for someone who has like depression. And I thought it would be better when the sun came back, but and sometimes it is. It's weird. It's like if I almost feel like, and this is going to be really insulting to like bipolar people, but I just feel like when I'm motivated, I'm like hyper motivated. Mm-hmm. And I get like shit done and it's just like it's phenomenally impressive. And then when I don't have energy or motivation, like nothing happens.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of TV. I sleep on my couch. I look at inspirational videos.
Live vicariously.
Like, yeah, that would be good. I should make a plan. I don't.
The cycle repeats.
Yeah. So, but tomorrow's Friday as we're recording. So I'm just like, hooray. And I got paid. So it's just like,
woohoo.
You know, things are good.
Yeah. My landlords, for some reason, have to do like a biannual interior check, which I'm like, that should be illegal. Like, you're not allowed to be inside this domicile until I've given you the keys back, and then we can talk about what you don't like with what I did with the place. But now I have to, like, get all my shit together now.
When are they coming?
Well, okay, that's the thing, is they emailed Alan. Like, it's in the lease. I knew that this was gonna... I've been having existential dread about it since we moved in. And they emailed and they were like, yeah, somebody's going to schedule this or they won't.
Okay.
Like, what is this mind game? Like, are you going to or are you not? I'm gonna clean my house either way now. But, like, okay, because... Okay, and if my landlord, you better not listen to this. Turn it off. But I have a cat. Okay, and they knew I had a cat going into this. I didn't want there to be carpet in this house, but three of the rooms have carpet. That's not my fault. So yeah, she has thrown up on it many times. And I bought, like, a carpet cleaner. And then when I used it, I was like, oh, that's perfect. And then I looked at a part I had used it on, like, a month later, and I was like, it looks like it's a different color. Like, it looks like I made it a different color or something. I'm still going to use it. I'm going to try again and use it. But that's something that I'm just – my anxiety is just not great.
I would recommend Nature's Miracle if you haven't tried that kind.
I have tried it and it didn't, like, get it out all the way. Oh, so I got this, like, Bissell, like, carpet cleaner, like, okay, heavy duty thing. But the thing is, I can't have, like, Branwyn in the room for 24 hours. But this is, like, the room she stays in. So, because, I mean, it's all over. I just gotta do it all over. So I've just been waiting for a day I can keep her out for 24 hours.
Yeah, right. Yeah, wow.
Because if it's during the work day, that's just not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I actually have a bed down here. I'm recording in another room again. And I have a bed down here. I don't know if you can see it. No, you can't. But no. it's on the floor behind me. But she is not a big fan of coming down here. But I have a bed for her. I have her litter box. I guess the next step is just to get yummy, yummy treats so she can come down here. But wherever I am, generally, that's where she is.
Yeah.
So, well, if you want some help, you know, organizing or cleaning, I can, if you give me some leeway, I can probably come help you.
You're my hero.
Mm-hmm. Right back at you. Hey, Max, should we get into these movies?
Sure.
Okay. So I had never seen The Birds. How about you?
Never. I had seen, I think, like, maybe The Kill Count for The Birds, if really? That exists. I knew every beat of what happened, but I had never seen it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's really funny. We just did Rope on the Quinisode. I had never seen that one either, so...
Yeah, I haven't, like, watched a lot of Hitchcock films for all that he is, you know, praised as, like, you know, great filmmaker, classic. Just haven't watched any.
When I was a kid, well, I was in high school, I think, there was Alfred Hitchcock Presents on Sunday morning. And so that would be, like, if we had a sleepover or something. My girlfriends and I would watch that in the morning. And I've seen Psycho and Vertigo and what's that one? Oh, Vertigo is the one that Quinn really likes. But Tippi Hedren was in Marnie, which I guess, remember when we watched the American version of The Ring?
Yes.
And the horse part, we think that was a nod to the other Tippi Hedren.
I'm just thinking about it.
It's so bad. The other Tippi Hedren movie called Marnie, which I haven't seen. But this is the brief plot synopsis from IMDb. A wealthy San Francisco socialite pursues a potential boyfriend to a small Northern California town. Because that's normal.
Pursues is putting it like very is a very positive spin.
I would stalks. Say stalks for sure.
Creeps.
A Northern California town that slowly takes a turn for the bizarre when birds of all kinds suddenly begin to attack people. This was directed by Alfred Hitchcock, screenplay by Evan Hunter, who also, when he wrote novels, he went by the name Ed McBain, and it's based on The Birds by Daphne du Maurier. It stars Rod Taylor, Jessica Tandy, Suzanne Plachette, and Tippi Hedren. The cinematography was by Robert Birks. It was edited by George Tomasini, and it was released on March 28th. Oh my gosh! It was just the anniversary.
Wow.
1963, and has a running time of 119 minutes. And just fun fact, I was watching Netflix. I was watching YouTube earlier, and The Birds is coming to Netflix in April.
Huh.
But I watched it on Peacock.
I watched it on Tubi.
Yeah.
I think if somebody hasn't already done this, maybe I need to take the burden on myself, but you could seriously make a horror trailer, but just with this beginning scene of Tippi following the guy, like, dun, dun.
Oh, yeah.
Like her, or like some kind of creepy, like, violin, like, as she's looking at the lovebirds and, like, I think it would work because it freaked me out watching it.
I know. I was just like, what?
This is scary.
Very scary. Like
if somebody did this to me, I would be terrified.
I know. And fucking Mitch's response is just like, oh, you crazy kid. You're so adorable. I love it when he calls her a child, too. That's so nice.
It's so cool and normal.
Okay, not to get ahead of ourselves.
But yeah, we should get into it.
So in the opening scene, we're in San Francisco. There are lots of birds in the sky. Hmm. And Tippi goes into a shop and wants to pick up her Mina bird, but it hasn't arrived yet. And then Rod comes in and he says to Tippi, I wonder if you could help me. And we think he's mistaking her for a shop worker. Turns out he knows that she wasn't a shop worker the whole time.
Bizarre.
And so he quizzes her about the birds, but she doesn't know what she's talking about. She tries to talk him into a canary and accidentally lets one loose.
She's also crazy, though, for just no hesitation. Like, I'm going to lie right now. Like, she's a pathological liar, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, or she's just great at improv. She's not that good at improv.
Her, like, not knowing the answers to any of these things actually does remind me of when I worked in, like, retail and stuff. Or, because, like, if you're not trained well, and then somebody's like, hey, what about this thing? And I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, I used to work at a garden shop, but they didn't actually let me work with the plants. I was just a cashier. And there are old people asking me, like, where do you get these peaches? And I'm like, I don't know. And I sounded exact, like, you have to spin it like, I'm not sure about that.
Right. Yeah.
Let me talk to someone.
Well, after the canary gets loose, Rod catches it. His character's name is Mitch. He catches it and he says, back in your gilded cage, Melanie Daniels, which is her name. And he knows her because she was in court. She had performed a practical joke. And he was pranking her back for that.
Maybe they're perfect for each other because, like, she doesn't work there. So how did he know she was going to be there? He, like, stalked her location.
No, I think he just recognized her.
Ah.
She's got a distinctive look.
It's like, what practical joke did she play?
I can't remember. I was going to go back, but I didn't.
She's a silly goose.
She is a silly goose. And as he drives away, she writes down his license plate, as you do.
Like, so she's, like, so quick with it.
And wants to find out who he is and where he lives. She buys two lovebirds because Mitch had wanted to buy them for his sister, whose birthday it is tomorrow. And she buys those lovebirds, and she's going to drop them off at Mitch's house. But Mitch's neighbor says that he's gone to Bodega Bay, where he goes every weekend. And she's like, oh, where's that? And he's like, oh, you just, like, I don't know, go up the highway for 60 miles. And so she does. She drives like a bat out of hell. And she's got these little puppet birds.
Not real.
in this cage on the floor of her car. And the puppets just kind of like sway back and forth, you know. She's taking these turns.
I think, like, I guess, was this a normal thing? Like, if you asked for information, I mean, maybe it would be kind of maybe a normal thing now because, like, just the fact that nobody suspects anything. And I know this isn't that type of movie, but, I mean, she's asking details about where this guy lives, you know. Calling just some dude up being like, hey, I've got his license plate. Can you tell me who he is? Does he live?
I think that was like a friend of hers or like a friend of the family. Cause she's like, is daddy there? You know, so she's.
Yeah, but like, that's so. And like, everybody just gives her any info that they want. And I think about this whenever I've like lived in a building where you have to swipe somebody in. And I'm always like, when you're in the moment, you kind of don't want to be that guy when there's somebody coming up and they're asking to get in. It's kind of like, I always would let them in because the idea of staying there being like, sorry, where's your card? No, like I couldn't do it.
Yeah. And then that's what they count on, right? I can't remember. I used to read like a lot more like murder mystery type of books. And one of them, this one was just talking about how easy it is to get information out of somebody. Mm-hmm. I mean, just chat somebody up in a bar, you know, you could probably, you know, get a lot of information, you know, very easily.
We give it up way too easily. I was on TikTok and first off, I mean, I kind of feel very like I've seen a lot of stuff about kids whose whole lives were put out on the internet by their parents. And now they're, you know, adults and they're like, I'm so traumatized. And like, I've been followed and stalked from this. And I was just, I mean, it was a sweet video of this guy whose son had made him a shirt, but then, and he was saying that he took like classes and somebody in the comments asked where he took classes. And he just told them, right. Like, he just told them it's here on this street. Like, okay, so if anybody wants to go find your kid, they can.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, we should be more careful for sure.
Yeah.
Well, these people are definitely not careful. She pulls up to the general store, which also is the post office, and she wants to surprise Mitch, who lives across the bay. And she wants to take a boat across, and the shopkeeper tells her how to get to the school. Well, the other thing is he thinks Mitch's sister's name is Alice. He's pretty sure it's Alice, but he's like, if you want to know for sure, then you need to go up to the school, and there you'll find the school teacher, and then the school teacher will tell you the name of Mitch's 11-year-old sister.
Normal. Never seen this woman before in my life, but she walked up to me with two birds, so she seems pretty normal and chill.
Wearing like a fur coat. Yeah, it's real normal.
It's all gravy.
So the school teacher is the sexy force of nature, which is Suzanne Plochette. And
that's true.
Nobody cares but me that Tippy is a lefty. She addresses the envelope to Kathy and takes her birds and sails across the bay. And then she drops the birds off inside homeboy's house.
She's like tiptoeing. Put him in here. Ooh, I'm going to scurry out. There's something wrong with you, ma'am.
She gets back in her little boat, and Mitch sees her and waves and drives to meet her in town.
Wait, can I tell you, can I tell the listeners a quick story that is related to this a little bit?
Yes, of course.
one time, I don't remember how old I was, but before high school, Dad was dating people, and he dated this one lady who I don't think I ever met, but she was very creepy. And one time in the middle of the, like in the evening, she knocked on the door. I answered it. Nobody was there, but she had left a bowl, a wooden bowl of like fruits and vegetables. And that was weird. But then another time, Dad and I went out somewhere. And when we came back, we had, you know, a little, just tiniest little plot where you could plant stuff. And she had either gone in herself or sent somebody there, and it was all planted with plants.
Whoa.
And it was not sweet. We were so freaked out. It was so creepy. And so then Dad immediately was like, that was not cool. Like, this is over. And so then the next time we left, she came back and ripped it all out.
Oh,
and then it emptied. Okay. So like, this is not cute. Like, it was, and like, I feel like if this was a man, obviously, we would be so freaked out. And I can tell you, even if it's a woman who does it, it's still scary.
Very scary. Yeah. Well, even that one, the only time anything like that ever happened to me is somebody left me a 6-pack of beers on like St. Patrick's Day on my landing. Gross. Clearly, I mean, at that point, I had been sober probably a decade or more. So this person like clearly didn't know me very well. And I was just like, well, what? Like, I'm the only person who lives here. What? So I just called up somebody, you know, who was still, who drank. And I'm like, you want this? I don't particularly want it in my house. But yeah, it is weird.
It just feels to know somebody was there while you weren't.
Okay. So right before she gets to the dock, she's attacked by a seagull. And she gets a little cut on her head. And she finds out that Mitch is a lawyer, and she says that she lies and says that she's staying the week. She's just like in the neighborhood, and she's just staying in the, she was staying to visit her friend, Annie Hayworth, the school teacher.
Again, you could just, it's going into the trailer. It's going into my trailer, my horror trailer.
I like your violin. And then Jessica Tandy shows up, but she's none too impressed with Melanie Daniels, and she reluctantly agrees to let her come to dinner. And Melanie goes back to Annie's and asks if she could stay overnight. And then she goes over to Mitch's for dinner, and Kathy hugs Melanie, never met her before. They have been on a little walk because their chickens won't eat. And they find out that the neighbor's chickens also won't eat. And that's a little weird. So Mitch and his mom are washing dishes and talking about Melanie. She's rich and she jumped naked last year into a fountain in Rome. story has it. And she's always showing up in the gossip columns. There's this awkward banter among all of them before Melanie goes back to Annie's, because Melanie's like, I didn't jump into a fountain in Rome naked. I was pushed into this fountain, and who cares, right? But it's just like, she's so upset that he would think this. He doesn't know her.
Yeah. You're not entitled to any of their time. Like, they're being so extraordinarily, I guess, generous. I would say foolish. They're just, like, making you food, letting you come in when you came there unannounced, with now, like, chores for them to do. You've given them chores. Here's two birds. I don't know how much he really wanted to buy those.
Well, he said he did for his sister. So, but before Melanie goes back to Annie's, we see that there are crows gathering on the telephone lines. So back at Annie's, Annie reveals that she was invited to Bodega Bay a long time ago, and she just stayed, as you do.
Her character is honestly one of the most bizarre.
Yes.
To me. Like, what did they, like, this poor woman, she's got the worst life, and she's so, like, seems so well adjusted, normal, not stalking people, beautiful teacher. Like, why does she get such the short end of the stick? And why does she exist in the movie to just get the short end of the stick?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she's so fucking sexy. And I guess she had been dating Mitch in San Francisco. And then I guess it was Jessica Tandy who put her off, you know, the mom, mm-hmm. who was just like so protective of Mitch and like so afraid of being abandoned. So, I mean, I think reasonably, you know, Annie was like, I'm out, but is she just waiting for the mother to die? Or like, why is she like hanging out on this weirdo island?
And it's, they don't have her act like she's totally cool with the fact that Melanie's there. Like, there's so much tension there. So it's like, so she does still like him.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So she's just, so it's like, she's kind of a loser. And I don't like that. Like, she's, it comes off with her feeling so desperate when, like, come on, this woman would never need to, you know. And to even have a character who's like that is stupid to me.
No, yeah, it just shows, I guess, how appealing this guy is
to a woman women. Will, like, upend her whole life to not be with him.
So weird. So then Mitch calls on the phone and he asks Melanie to come to Kathy's party tomorrow. And right before Melanie's about to go to bed, a seagull crashes into the door, dead. So the next day, Mitch and Melanie enjoy some drinks on a bluff away from the party. Melanie explains that she keeps herself busy Monday through Thursday, taking a semantics class at Berkeley, putting a little Korean boy through school, etc. And he says, "You need a mother's care, my child." And then, I mean, why? She's like, "Not my mother."
And she turns away so dramatic. Like, it felt like a parody a little bit.
I mean, it's
out of nowhere. She's like, "Not my mother."
My mother ran off with the barman from town and left us alone. And then he's like, "Oh, wow, that's heavy shit to tell a virtual stranger."
At a children's party.
The day after we met. Okay.
When you broke into my house. Is she, are her mommy issues supposed to be some sort of parallel with the mommy issues that Mitch has, you know, because that's a weird mother-son relationship.
Well, I know. Cause she's like, he's like, "Well, my mother's," he says something about his mother. I can't remember what it is, but she's like, "Oh, so you think it's better to be abandoned by your mother?" And he's like, "No, I don't. I think it's better to be loved by your mother. You psycho bitch."
Like, what are you talking about?
What are you even talking about? And she goes, "Oh, I better just go join the other children."
What?
Ed McBain, what are you doing? So then the kids are attacked by all these seagulls. This is great. And Mac revealed to me that he was watching this movie at 1.5 speed.
And the birds flying in it. And like all of them just falling to the ground and screaming. This movie did reveal to me, though, I was like, that would be fucking scary. Like, because there's not anything you can do, you know? Like, they're just flapping at you, and, like, you kind of are powerless. And the beaks are so scary.
The beaks are so scary. I agree.
Gotta cover your eyes.
There's one shot where this kid is almost, like, it looks like is going to be lifted off the ground by one of the seagulls, and Mitch has to rescue that child, and then Melanie rescues another child who's like on the ground and like kind of being like pecked at by one of the birds. And they get all the kids inside. There's this horrible bit of trivia about the birds. I don't know if I included it because it's so horrible. They had taped pins. They had taped the beaks of the birds shut, you know, with pins inside so that they would make sure that they would pop the balloons at the party.
Oh my God.
And one of the birds was missing at the end and they couldn't find this bird. And they were like, oh my God, if we don't find this bird, it's going to die because it's not going to be able to get its beak open. But they did find the bird. But what
the Jesus Christ.
That's amazing.
No movie is worth putting an animal through that. Like, no. Well, that is so messed up.
Mac, wait till I get to the trivia. You're going to be really
mad. I'm scared. I'm scared.
So Melanie.
Because when I looked up to try to watch the birds, the first thing that popped up was how many birds died in the birds?
Oh, gosh.
I was like, oh, great. That's the only thing on people's minds when they think about this.
Well, Melanie agrees to stay, of course, and eat something before she heads back after this traumatic, you know, bird attack. And, oh, this might be my favorite, though, because she goes, she sees a bird, like, on the floor, and she goes, Mitch? And then all of these birds fly down through the chimney into the room and just, like, fill the room. And, wah!
That's so scary.
That's very scary. Mitch is Johnny on the spot, and he puts the table in front of the fireplace, and he swats at the birds to get them out of the room. And the women escape through one door. Mitch goes out the other. Sheriff comes by, but he completely minimizes the sparrow attack. Like,
yeah,
were the kids like torturing the birds? Like, why do you think the birds attacked?
This is so wild to me because I feel like we should have had this scene way earlier. Because to me, if you had a party full, like a children's party full of kids who got pecked at and they obviously have like blood, like you're telling me their parents aren't going straight to the police or somebody, you know, like what would the parents say? Just like, oh, Johnny just, you know, had a rough time. It's like, no, Johnny's like covered head to toe in seagull pecks. Like you'd be freaked out.
I feel like though there was like a little bit of dialogue, like, are all the kids okay? And they were like, oh yeah, Johnny got kind of, you know, ripped up a little, but he'll be fine. Like I do feel like that was a line in there, like, nah,
like that's so, I guess if you made this movie today,
yeah,
that the parents of today would not
no,
all the parents would be dead.
Well, all the parents would be at the party, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, Lydia's pretty upset, and the painting of the dad above the piano is askew. Of course, Melanie stays the night. So the next morning, Lydia is dropping Kathy off, and she goes over to the Fawcett farm. And she finds, this is kind of spooky slash weird, all of the teacups hanging on the hutch have been broken. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's cool. Doesn't make sense, but I like it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like,
it's eerie.
It is eerie. And she calls, you know, for him, and then she finds him, and his eyes have been pecked out, and there are bird carcasses like all over the bedroom.
This scene is like was so shocking to me. Like,
yeah,
like wow. Like I mean, all of it's pretty gruesome, but this is just like it. It kind of feels like out of nowhere. Like whoa, holy shit.
Yeah, and there was something about the shots where it was like a long shot of his body, and then like it basically goes boom, 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 like close up, you know, and yeah. then there's just like a shot on his eyes before she runs out in terror, leaving her purse, and she can't speak to the farmhand when she gets out, and she drives back home, and she just can't stop thinking about Kathy at school because she's like, you know, there are windows all over that school. And are you sure Kathy is going to be okay? And she has a little conversation with Melanie. She says that she misses her husband and she's not sure how she feels about her son liking Melanie. But to ease Lydia's mind, Melanie goes to school to check on Kathy. And they're singing this crazy song. Do you remember this song, Mac?
I did think it was weird. What was it?
It was like hickety hockety. Now. I don't know. It was like it didn't make any sense. I think there was like a little bit of a story, but apparently it's an old Scottish song that was adapted or something. But it goes on for, I don't know, 2 minutes. It goes on for like a while. And Melanie goes out to the playground and she sits and she smokes and all these crows start to gather.
I think this is like my favorite some of my favorite shots. Like, it is just like it builds so much and it's so nerve wracking because she's not realizing any of it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So all of a sudden it seems that the monkey bars are covered in crows and Melanie goes inside. Annie tells the kids that they have to go quietly out of school, pretend they're, you know, having a fire drill. But the kids like,
yeah, that,
like, that doesn't work. They just like tear off running.
And, that was funny too.
And all the birds, you know, rustle and they chase and attack the kids.
I did. There's something in movies I always, again, I was not alive during this time, but the idea of somebody just barging into a classroom and like stopping the whole class is like, that would never happen. I don't know. I'm like, how would that ever happen? But I guess it was a really small town, but I could just never even see that happening.
But she's like a virtual stranger, Melanie. I mean,
like to even be let in the class, like, again, I know this was a different time and this was like on a little, you know, a really tiny community, but like, at my old high school, they would tell us like, hey, if you graduate and you want to come back, if you try just going on the campus, you will be hauled off in handcuffs. Like, whoa, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how serious they are.
No, I think that's maybe, well, who's getting in touch and time check this, but I would say 2000s. Like, I don't think, I mean, it probably had something to do with 9/11 and just like generally, you know, security and stuff. But, well, let me think. Maybe when you were a little guy. Okay, maybe 90s.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess it makes sense with like dangers of just letting a stranger go onto campus now.
Well, for sure. I mean... But I do remember a couple of times, like in the mid-70s, friends of my mom, you know, picked me up from school. I don't know how much of a rigmarole they had to go through, if any. I remember thinking, okay, this is weird. I don't know if I like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think there was definitely a change, maybe sometime in the 90s. When you like had to register, like who could pick up the kids from school and things like that.
Now I'm thinking of a better, okay, you make the birds today and this scene would be Melanie's trying to get to her, but she can't.
Right.
Because she's got to go through the rigmarole and they're like, we don't know you. You're not even from this town. Like, why would we just, and then that's when the birds start hitting the windows. Now that would be a good scene.
That's good. That makes a whole lot more sense. So Melanie, Kathy, and one of Kathy's little friends get to the car, but Melanie doesn't have the key.
Stupid woman.
She honks the car. She honks the car horn, and the crows disperse. That's the end of that scene. She's in a bar now, and she calls her daddy. Like, how? The actress was 33, I think. I think she's supposed to be playing mid-20s.
Yeah. Even saying papa would be better. Like, if you got to be like formal or father.
So cool. And this very helpful woman. Remember, I was like, wait till Mrs. Bundy shows up. So this very helpful woman, Mrs. Bundy, explains the difference between blackbirds and crows. There's a drunk in the corner. He keeps saying, it's the end of the world. Kind of funny. And the old lady says that it seems really weird that the birds would attack all of a sudden. And she also points out that it would be impossible to get rid of all the birds on Earth because there are so many of them. Mm-hmm. There's a woman who is kind of hysterical. She wants everyone to stop talking and scaring her kids. And she wants to leave, and one guy is going to help her get to San Francisco, but he has to finish his drink. It's like a whole thing.
This is crazy too, because she's like, let's go, and he downs his alcohol. He's like, yep, I'll go drive you. What?
Well, this is kind of the iconic scene that maybe if you haven't seen this movie, you might have seen this scene, because the birds start to attack again and there's this beautiful explosion at the gas pump. And
can we talk about like the shots of Tippi? Like, what was up with this one, Hitchcock?
her mouth is open and she's just like turning her head and just like reacting to things.
This was crazy. I thought this was so stupid looking. Like, how long did that gas go? Because each cut, you know, is right. so long and you're just, there's, it was like stop motion.
So, okay, there's one pump and a guy has been like felled by the birds. And then I guess he dropped the gas pump or something. And then all the gas is like trickling down the road.
So much gas too.
So much gas to this other car. Where a guy like gets out of his car and, as you do, immediately lights a cigarette,
and they're like, "No, no, 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 no!"
And he just throws his match on the ground and then immediately immolates. I mean, like one big like conflagration. It's beautiful. And it then there's this overhead shot, and we see the seagulls like, "Oh, buddies."
Let's go.
And so they all descend on the town. And Melanie closes herself up in a phone booth. But soon the seagulls start to break through the glass. Of course, Mitch rescues her. And then inside the bar, there's only women now. I don't know where all the guys went. I mean, some of
them. Well, they're off doing, you know, they're capable. And they got to go save
the day. Oh, that's true. That's a good point. So they're all just, it looks like they're all waiting for the bathroom though. But anyway, they're all.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
They're all in this little like corridor. And the hysterical woman accuses Melanie of causing the bird attack.
I love this scene. Get her out of there. Maybe she did cause it.
And one woman screams at Melanie that she is evil. And Melanie slaps her in the face. Awesome. Oh,
again, this would work in the horror movie that they see the real her.
That is true. We need to do a remake, Mac.
We do. It's going to be so good.
Mitch and Melanie go and get Kathy from Annie's, but poor Annie has been killed by the birds.
Another L. She takes yet another L. Now she's dead.
So Kathy is inside the house. She's traumatized and she's crying. Mitch, you know, shields her from the horror that is her former teacher, all packed to death and bloody. And
I do think that scene is really great and chilling, like when they're looking for her and then you see Kathy in the window just crying like she watched the whole thing, you
know?
And probably feels really guilty because this, you know, her teacher saved her. Like that part is like, oof, that poor kid.
So at home they work to fortify the house. And I think this is all silent, right? There's like no dialogue. It's just they're all kind of in shock and they're boarding up the doors. And Kathy becomes ill and begins to vomit, thankfully, off camera. The birds start screeching and attacking the house. That's kind of scary. I mean, the birds don't sound like birds in this movie, by and large. And this is just kind of like scary, noisy bird noises that are really loud.
And I just love them all huddled in there. It's kind of like when there's a storm passing and you're just like sheltering in place, you know, like it just felt very tense, but also powerless because like, what are they going to do?
Yeah. Mitch ties one of the windows shut and then he makes sure that everyone is okay, despite the fact that his hand is all bloody from gull attacks. The gulls are starting to shred the back door. That's kind of a good scene because he walks past the door and then there's a static shot on the door and the birds are all like starting to shred it. He goes and gets a huge piece of furniture and puts it against that door. Then the power goes out. But Mitch is cool as cucumber, man. He just goes and gets a flashlight.
I mean, he's a handsome guy. He's very well dressed. And, you know, I feel like, though he is the most capable one, I mean, of course, I feel like he's not, I don't know, he's not creepy.
No.
He doesn't creep me out. He's not the creepy one here, surprisingly. We like Mitch.
Yeah, we do like Mitch. So the birds finally disperse and Mitch, Lydia, and Kathy fall asleep. Melanie sees that the lovebirds are calm in their cage. Okay, this doesn't make any sense. It's a part of the trivia. This is the part that is going to infuriate you as it did me. But
oh, no.
She goes upstairs and opens the door to the bedroom. She sees that the birds have pecked away at the roof and they have all been nesting in the bedroom. They attack her and she faints against the door. But Mitch opens the door and pulls her out. And I don't know if this was like sad or scary or comedic, but she's basically unconscious. And so he's got to like push against the door to get it open. And her 90-pound body or whatever is like, you know, blocking this door. And then he just sort of like drags her like through it. I don't know.
I thought she was dead. Like I couldn't remember exactly how it ended. I was like, damn, is she dead? Like
she, yeah. I mean, it was a bad attack for her. And she's not the same for the rest of the movie. She's just catatonic basically for the rest of the movie. Mitch and Lydia bandage her up, which is kind of nice because now they're on the same side and they're working together for a common goal. He tries to pour some brandy down her throat. Mitch says that they have to go to a hospital in San Francisco. And then somebody criticized, somebody on Letterboxd said this was like super dumb and slow. I think this is one of the best parts of the movie because Mitch is moving super slowly so as not to disturb the birds. And he's going into the garage to get the car. There are birds everywhere.
Yeah.
Of course. And he puts on the radio. He hears that most of the people have gotten out of Bodega Bay. And according to the radio, it seems that the attacks come in waves with long stretches in between, kind of like the tides, although they never tie it to the tides.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think
they in the book?
Yeah. I think in the short story it was. Anyway, but no one really knows why the birds are attacking. Mitch drives slowly and quietly to the front of the house, and then he walks slowly and quietly back up the steps, gets the women, gets them into the car. Melanie's in shock, and she almost blows it at one point because when she comes outside and sees all the birds, she goes, no, no, and they have to quiet her. But Kathy wants to bring the lovebirds because they haven't hurt anyone. So,
all right, Kathy.
They do get those lovebirds. And then Lydia holds Melanie in her arms. So now it's a full transformation. She's definitely, you know, been accepted by Lydia. And then they drive slowly and quietly off. And there's little rays of like God's hope shining through the clouds or something at the end.
But like everything is covered with birds. It's like they own Bodega Bay now.
Yeah.
It is theirs. And they're just kind of silently watching as they drive away, like, yeah, that's right. Get out.
What phobia is that, Mac?
Ornithophobia, the fear of birds.
Yep.
Let's get into this upsetting trivia. I'm ready.
All right, trivia. Alfred Hitchcock revealed on the Dick Cavett Show that 3,200 birds were trained for the movie. He said that the ravens were the cleverest and the seagulls were the most vicious.
Both those make sense to me.
Sir Alfred Hitchcock saw Tippi Hedren in a 1961 commercial aired during the Today Show and put her under contract. In the commercial for a diet drink, she is seen walking down a street and a man whistles at her slim, attractive figure, and she turns her head with an acknowledging smile. In the opening scene of this movie, the same thing happens as she walks toward the bird shop. This was an inside joke by Hitchcock.
Yeah, he probably thought it was funny because he probably thought that was a cool thing to do. You know, this thing women love.
They love it. Melanie wears the same green suit throughout the movie, so Tippi Hedren was provided with 6 identical green suits for the shoot. I wondered about that because, like, going on day 3, I'm like, is that the same?
It looks so crisp.
It does. Tippi Hedren's age was listed as 28 in the press releases when the film came out, an unsurprising fabrication considering 33 was especially old for a Hollywood starlet making her acting debut. 1935 would be your commonly reported birth year for the next 4 decades until Hedren herself put a stop to it by coming out with her real age. The schoolhouse
not
in Bodega.
Not different.
No. The schoolhouse in Bodega, California has also been known to be haunted, even back during filming. According to Tippi Hedren, the entire cast was spooked to be there. She also mentioned how she had a feeling while there that the building was immensely populated, but there was nobody there. When Alfred Hitchcock was told about the schoolhouse being haunted, according to Hedren, he was even more encouraged to film there. This film and the original story by Daphne du Maurier shared no characters and, in fact, have only in common the Bayside town setting, the birds' bizarre behavior, their inexplicable tendency to launch frenzied attacks, then fall dormant, only to attack again later, and, of course, the title. Also, the original story takes place in Britain and centers around a man protecting his wife and two children at their isolated cottage, as opposed to this movie, which centered on the spirited but troubled city dweller Melanie Daniels, who traveled to the California coast on a whim.
I just had, like, the stupidest thought, just thinking, yeah, that's the same plot as this one. Mitch with his wife, his mom, and the two children, Melanie and Kathy. Oh,
gross.
It's gross, but isn't it kind of true?
Yes, it is. So I wanted to know this story, so I looked it up on YouTube, and I found a podcast that's on YouTube and also all the podcast outlets that I wanted to shout out. It's called Classic Ghost Stories, and there's this lovely guy, Tony Walker, who narrates ghost stories, and he does about one a week, and he's really great. I don't know if he's a trained voice actor, but he's very entertaining to listen to, so I would totally recommend Woho is that you check him out. Shortly before he died, Japanese director Akira Kurosawa created an unranked chronological list of the movies he considered the 100 greatest of all time. However, because he deliberately limited himself to only one movie per director, it is actually more of a greatest directors than best films list. The single Alfred Hitchcock movie that he chose to include was this movie. In his accompanying commentary, he noted that the sight of so many birds massed together caused him to feel dread and wondered how Hitchcock had managed to shoot those scenes. And I will say with the story, there's one image of the birds rising up from the ocean. Oh. And I'm in my kitchen in broad daylight in the, you know, one morning, and I was just like, whoa, that's like kind of scary.
Got a wee fright.
I did get a wee fright. All right, well, here we get to the really bad stuff. Hedren was the victim of harassment by Hitchcock. For example, during the recording of the last scene in which the birds attack, Hitchcock forced her to replay the scene numerous times while real and wooden birds were thrown at her.
Oh my God.
One of them hit Hedren's eye, causing a retinal bleed. The blood and injuries with which the actress appears in the scenes are real. The dislike with which Hitchcock made Hedren work stemmed from Hedren's refusal of the director's sexual advances. After the scene, Hedren was so exhausted that she sat in the middle of the set and began to cry. She had to be taken to the emergency room.
Oh my God. That is so sad.
But wait, there's more. The climactic scene in which Melanie is attacked in the bedroom took 7 days to shoot. 7 days.
Oh my God.
Hedren said, "It was the worst week of my life. The physical and emotional tolls of filming the scene were so strong on her that production was shut down for a week afterwards, and Hedren ended up in the hospital." It also says that the birds were attached to her clothes by long nylon threads, so they could not get away.
He just tortured her.
Mm-hmm. Before filming the final scene, when Melanie goes upstairs, Tippi Hedren asks Sir Alfred Hitchcock, "Hitch, why would I do this?" Hitch's response was, "Because I tell you to."
What a fucking creep. Honestly, piece of shit. Like it is really hard for me to engage with older movies sometimes when, like, I've never seen them. And then my main introduction to the director is primarily, this man was a fucking piece of shit. So then it really does sour. Like, I don't blame people who see things and experience things and then come to find out this is a piece of shit person. And then they're still left with these feelings of loving the thing. But I don't have that. So, you know, with movies like this or with like, what's his name? Kubrick?
Yeah.
Like I just, I don't know. All I can think of is what a piece of shit they are. And it just makes me be like, well, this movie isn't even that good anyway. Because I can't like it. You know?
Yeah, it was really hard. Like when I did The Collector and I read all this stuff about that director, like there's a very climactic scene at the end where it's in the rain and the man is dragging this woman by her hair, like through the grass and all this other stuff. But before, in between shots, the director would just have crew people just like throw buckets of water on the actress. Just
God. Like, it's just cruelty.
Yeah. And I said when I put out that foundational ep, like, Wohos, if you know of any examples of this with men, like, get in touch. Because all I ever hear are, you know, stories like this where women are tortured. And it just is like, don't you trust your actors? Like, I know that Hitchcock really didn't have, he had, like, a lot of contempt for all actors. You know, he just thought of them, I think. But I read somewhere he just thought of them as like cattle, you know.
Oh my God.
But I mean, yeah, I don't know. Like a fucking egomaniacal. Well, he was psychotic. I think he probably should have been like stopped and institutionalized.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not going to pretend I was there or know anything, you know, about like. Like, I know in a situation like that, I think it probably was really hard for people to feel like they could stand up. But that's also so upsetting that there would be, you know, a ton of people probably on that set just sitting there watching this happen to her and like not doing anything. Like, that must have felt so isolating and sad.
Yeah, for sure.
And it just makes me sad. Like, I saw that she, you know, expressed a lot of these. Like things that happen like a lot later in her life, and just sucks also when people do that too, or like when that happens and then people are like, no, that didn't happen. How do you know?
Yeah.
Like these weird people who just came for this man who's dead, who they've never met, you know, against like who would be more correct, you or the woman, you know, who is in the movie.
Well, Mac, I wonder what Letterboxd has to say about it.
Let's see.
Lockshore gave it a half star. Utter trash. No explanation for the bird attacks.
Fair.
Which is true. Not that it's utter trash, but there is no explanation. Elliot gave it a half star. Not enough birds.
Okay, well, I don't know if that's true.
Caleb Leahy gave it a half star. Maybe I have bad taste, but this is the most overrated movie in all of existence. Alfred Hitchcock is an amazing director, but damn does this suck. I literally hate how there's no score at all. Like I couldn't get jump scared or anything because there was no music to get me into that atmosphere of getting scared.
I didn't even notice that. There's no music?
No music.
That is bizarre.
Half a star by Jeremy. Terrible film. The characters were so unlikable, and each character had their own problem that I hated so much. I hated the way Melanie spoke and the way she sounds. Like, why can't she just speak normal? There's random dialogue in there that doesn't matter and just makes the film a lot longer than it should be. I absolutely do not recommend this film at all. It is boring as hell. In all seriousness, I had to pause like every 10 minutes to take a small nap. Because I kept getting so tired.
This hate for the transatlantic accent.
I love it, though.
Me too. I like it, too. It, like, gives such a feel to older movies.
Bren 99 gave it a half star. Not sure what all the hype is about. And if you look into where Hitchcock got the idea from, he got the rights from a female writer, Daphne du Maurier, who actually had a story with some body and backstory as to why the birds were attacking. And he stripped all the juicy info away, leaving us with an incredibly boring film. Disappointing, considering the hype.
I think that's fair, because I think I really would have thought that was cool, like the tides and stuff. Like,
it's, I don't know, you, it's good, and it's grim as fuck. Ooh. Yeah, it's. I would totally recommend that story. Bassam Imad gave it a half star. Nice try, movie. But birds ain't real. We all know that.
The only good review is that one, because it's the only one speaking the truth.
I forgot that that was a thing.
They're not real. It's so absurd.
It is so weird, because I'm just like, okay, if it's one thing if you want to believe that we're in a simulation, like, sure, you know, that's plausible. But just that there's no, like, okay, there are cats and there are rhinoceroses and there are sharks, sure.
But birds?
Birds, no. That's a step too far.
What? Like, why would they be so, why would they all be so varied?
No.
No? Okay.
Jules Mendelsohn gave it 5 stars. Invasion of the nuclear family by incest.
True, but you gave it 5 stars?
I know, I don't understand.
Is that why you liked it? Like,
so what he's talking about, Wohos, is the weird relationship between Mitch and his mother, where he calls her darling and dear, and he seems to have taken the place of his own father. And
because also Kathy, the little sister, does feel like his daughter.
Yes.
Which is very weird. And also, I really do think Melanie looks so much like his mom. Like, they have the same hairstyle. They both have basically the same face shape, like similar clothing. I'm like, this is weird.
Yeah. And Mitch's sister, I almost said Mitch's daughter. Mitch's sister is about 20 years younger than he is. So, which is, I mean, I dated a guy who was the last born of 14 and he was in his 20s. He had siblings in their 60s. I mean, it's not impossible. It's just very weird. And anyway.
Doesn't really make sense.
Rock382 gave it 5 stars. Wow. I cannot believe I waited so long to watch this. Also, didn't know I needed a floor shot in a car of 2 birds going with the sway of a car up curvy roads. But we got that in this film, and it was extremely satisfying. Tom Gilbert gave it 5 stars. I think the real fucked up thing here is her just following this guy to the secluded little port town. You deserved everything that came to you.
But you gave it 5 stars.
I don't understand. Daniel Rhino gave it 5 stars. It took me way too long to watch this film, but I'm glad I did. The Birds is a wonderful film about birds attacking people with no explanation as to why. The characters are very engaging, and the story keeps you engaged. Maybe choose a different. The bird attacks look very painful and terrifyingly real. Seeing something you encounter every day go on a killing spree with no explanation why, is a true horror. This is one that I will watch over and over again. This is a horror classic you definitely need to see.
Big fan.
Guess what?
What?
I wonder what Winnick had to say about it. Eric Winnick gave it 5 stars. I was way too young when I first saw The Birds, and it kind of seared itself into my brain from a tender age. The UHF Channel 38 in Boston, home of The Movie Loft, had a tendency to make a big deal about certain films, and I think this was one they showed without commercial interruption. Another was The Deer Hunter, which I was also too young to watch. Anyway, picture an 8 or 9-year-old watching Tippy attacked by seagulls, the kid walking, then running by the playground, and eyeless Jessica Tandy. Wait.
Wait. That happened.
Winnick. You're...
That didn't happen.
And the scene in the attic where Tippy discovers the roof's been torn away. You don't forget that stuff, but sometimes you misremember it. It wasn't until a later viewing that I realized how fucking brilliant the film was. How would we rate this, Mac?
In birds.
In birds.
In birds. Four.
I'm surprised.
Did you think I was going to go lower?
Yeah.
I mean, I could do 3.5. I was very close.
Yeah, I was kind of bobbling between 3 and 3.5. I don't love it.
I don't love it. I'm like, I'll do a 3.5.
But actually, in light of our conversation last week, maybe no, because I mean, I just feel like some of the effects are not good.
Yeah, and I just, to me, I'm gonna sneeze.
Uh-oh.
Phew! Thank you. I don't know. It's really tough for me to even appreciate what parts now do look real, because now knowing that they are real or involve, you know, birds being hurt, it's just like, I don't know. It is the same way I feel about The Shining, of like, I can't really like that scene of Jack Nicholson, you know, waving the bat at her. Like, that's not really acting I'm seeing. It's real terror, and I don't want to see that. And I don't know, just knowing that Tippi Hedren is like the titular character, or not the main character, and, you know, had to go through all this, like, totally sours my view of it. I appreciate the, you know, and I appreciate, again, anybody who watched it before knowing stuff like that. Like, that's fair. And I appreciate the cultural significance, but I don't know. It's kind of soured.
I do wish you would have, like, just adapted the real story. But I mean,
sounds good.
It was way too grim. I mean, I don't know if he could have gotten it made with that ending. Mm. But what have we learned, Mac?
Oh man. I mean, like, don't just give people's personal info away, even if a pretty lady asks you to. Because it's just weird.
It's so weird. And it's, yeah, we just have to be a lot more careful of, you know, giving out information to strangers.
Don't follow a guy. Listen, he's just not that into you, okay? The guy doesn't want to date you. Don't stay in that little bay town because you might get killed by birds.
That is,
and then what do you have?
Nothing. Yeah.
Nothing. And you're so sexy and hot. Considering you're this lady. What's her name again?
Annie Hayworth.
But the actress?
Oh, Suzanne Plachet.
Yeah. You look like that. You don't have to do that.
By the way, look up Suzanne Plachet in that Columbo episode. I think it's in the first or second season.
Oh. Is she great?
Do you know her?
No.
Okay. There was a show in the 70s called The Bob Newhart Show. And she was his wife. And she played a really amazing, like, partner at a time on American sitcoms where you didn't see that a lot. And then Bob Newhart had another sitcom in the 80s. And at the end of that whole show, he wakes up and it was all a dream. And he's back in bed with his wife, Suzanne Plachet, from the original show.
Oh.
And so that was just an amazing, you know, finale to a series. But she is fantastic. So she's dead. Tippi's still alive, and she's, I think, in her 90s.
Yes.
And you know that she's Melanie Griffith's mom.
I did not know that.
Yeah. All right. Well, would we watch it again, Mac?
You know, I would. I'd watch it again. Maybe still on 1.5 speed, because that is funny.
I think it would be, this is one, if you can get high, I think it would probably be fun if you could get high. Yeah,
watch it with some friends. Because, I mean, when it attacks those kids, I've laughed my ass off.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we haven't done this in a while, I realized. Who wins the You Fool Award?
Annie.
Yeah, poor Annie.
I mean, Tippi, I can't call her a fool. Melanie, I can't call her a fool because... She's far beyond being a fool. She needs help. But Annie, ooh, girl. It did not have to go like that for you.
No, it sure didn't.
I'm just so confused.
That dick couldn't have been that good.
I'm just like, now I keep thinking, why was she a character? Like, she only was there to be a loser? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess to be sort of this weird rival to Melanie.
which was weird because I liked them more when they were just like, you know, chilling. I was like, that's cool, you know.
She had to explain the mother's character, you know, to Melanie. So that she could have that scene with her later. Mm. Yeah. She wasn't really a person.
And that's why she got, like, at the end, Hitchcock was like, or not, the screen. Who's the guy who did the screenplay?
Ed McBain. Or McBain was just like. Evan Hunter, I'm sorry.
Oh. Evan Hunter said, just fucking throw her out.
By the way, Ed McBain writes really good, funny mysteries. Yeah. So that was really a surprise. But this was early on in his career. So anyway, take that with a grain of salt, I guess. Should we move on to Black Sheep?
Sure. So, Black Sheep is a movie from New Zealand. The short plot summary from IMDb says, an experiment in genetic engineering turns harmless sheep into bloodthirsty killers that terrorize a sprawling New Zealand farm. It was written and directed by Jonathan King, and it stars Nathan Meister, Danielle Mason, Peter Feeney, Tammy Davis, Glennis Liebstam, Tandy Wright, and Oliver Driver. Cinematography by Richard Bluck and edited by Chris Plummer. It came out September 10th, 2006 from, what is TIFF?
Toronto International Film Festival, TIFF.
Ah. And March 29th, 2007 in New Zealand. Runtime of 87 minutes. Mom watched it on Freevee. I watched it on Tubi. Oh, yeah. I think I misspoke. Earlier, I watched The Birds on the Internet Archive, and it was really, really good quality, so you can watch it for free there.
Hmm. And by the way, Quinn, I think, watched Rope on Internet Archive the other week, too. So
it's a great
site. Can you watch that on your TV? Or
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I think it's just there to like download or watch. All right, so we begin with the camera panning across a lovely green vista, and we hear the bleats of a bunch of sheep who are being herded by a man, two boys, and a herding dog. The father says, "Good on you, boy," to the younger child, and there's a bitter-looking older boy in a leg brace who storms off. We get a title card, and then the older boy is seen approaching the chained-up sweet sheep named Dudley with an axe. How could you hurt a sheep? Like, that was one of my favorite parts of this movie, the sheep. They're so cute.
They are so neat. I love looking at them. I know. They're so cool looking.
Like, goats are kind of – I've met goats in real life. I had a friend in college who had a goat farm, and they're really cute. They're just kind of like stupid – even more stupid dogs a little bit. but they're not as – like, you have to really look hard and find the cute, but you don't have to with sheep. They're just cute.
Yeah.
So Henry, the little boy, starts calling for his sheep Dudley, and he walks into the barn. He's traumatized as he sees the bloody corpse of the sheep drop from the rafters, and the older brother charges at him, wearing the remains of the sheep on his head with just blood and viscera all over him. And he's just really like, there's an extended scene of him just, you know, scaring this boy out of his wits. But they're interrupted by this old woman, Mrs. Mack, telling them that their father has had an accident. I do love that she just walks up and she's like, boys. Like, I would be like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? Boys, something's happened. Like, she's so solemn. Now we see 15 years later. It's just like a kind of a little fade. And now Henry's an adult sitting in a car looking very scared. They really did a great job casting a child who looks like the main character. Like, they do look very similar. He has such an intense fear of sheep for obvious reasons. And we can see like returning after being away. Meanwhile, there are these two animal rights activists that are trying to break into a ranch. And, you know, they see them wheeling some stuff into, you know, this lab looking thing, and they note that there's a specific scientist there, this woman, like, oh, if they've got her, this must be crazy. So his older brother, who now looks very, like, you know, stately with his suit, flies his plane onto a field, and Henry tells the cabbie to wait because he's not going to stay there long, even though he's already racked up $400 in fare. So there's a bunch of ram's heads hanging on the walls of the main house. Very weird. And Henry comes into the house, and Mrs. Mack comes up behind him and presses a rifle to the back of his neck. But as soon as she realizes it's Henry, she says, "Bugger me days," and says, "Don't worry, she hasn't shot anyone since Christmas." I love her.
I love that. Was a great line.
That was so good.
I'm going to start saying that.
Don't worry, I haven't shot anyone since Christmas. The older brother, Angus, is rehearsing for when he's going to auction off the herd. And he's surprised to see Henry and, of course, just has to neg him a little bit. Makes sense from what we've seen of him. You know, he makes fun of him for going to therapy. This guy's such an asshole. Like, you caused the trauma. So the activists are spying on the laboratory. One of them is this kind of like very stereotypical hippie looking dude, like tall and gangly, and then just a pretty blonde girl. The guy Grant just fucking bolts past the fence, grabs a bottle of something that was in a cooler named For Disposal Only, and runs back, and they have a little convo of what their steps were, and they were not running up and revealing their, you know, presence. So he falls as he's being chased by the scientists. He drops the bottle and it breaks. There is a nasty little mutated sheep creature that attacks him and bites his ear off. I love this little nasty guy. This was a great
the nasty sheep
effect.
The nasty sheep puppet thing.
Yeah, like it obviously looked fake, but I thought it was very good.
It kind of looks weird, like no fur on this thing. It just kind of looks hair, and the ear effect was kind of ridiculous. But they use the same thing in Megan, spoiler alert. So they're still using that same effect.
That's cool. Whose ear? Oh, the boy,
the little boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I remember that now. Yeah. It's like very long.
Yeah.
I don't think ears can be that long. No. I don't know. So Angus writes Henry a check for $2 million since they're going to get rid of the farm. And Henry is very sad that, you know, Angus has just gotten rid of all their dad's stuff. Angus says that the smart and profitable farming these days is a mental exercise. Mrs. Mack is butchering a rabbit in the kitchen, and Henry says, you know, he's going to leave, but Mrs. Mack says that Tucker, the farm manager, is going to take him up to the top to see everything. Meanwhile, the mutated sheep thing is crawling towards the flock and bites an inquisitive sheep on the nose.
And I think this is the sheep with the notched ear. This is like a really cool looking sheep, I think.
Oh.
The one that gets bitten the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Tucker and Henry, and by the way, I love Tucker. He's amazing. Probably my favorite character. He's so cute, so sweet. Just like a golden retriever of a person. they're in like this little, you know, buggy, and they get stopped by a lone sheep that's standing in the way. And Henry, of course, is still like so freaked out. Tucker notices that the sheep's been bitten and is, you know, just gonna grab it, throw it over the fence. But they're stopped by the female activists, whose name is Experience. And like, there's a funny little line or something where they ask her her name and she says Experience. And one of them is like, well, yeah, this has been an experience. And it made me laugh. She takes a rifle from the back of the truck and, you know, basically is like, hey, you know, this is a stick up. Meanwhile, Grant is going through it, catches and tearfully bites out the throat of a very, very cute bunny. He's so sad to do it. He's like, he's like crying as he does
it. I really loved it. He was good. He was a very good actor. Because, I mean, that's hard to pull off. You know, he's transforming into a zombie sheep man hybrid. And you know, clearly he's an animal lover, but he can't help himself.
Which is also funny because sheep, like, don't eat meat.
No, no.
So this wouldn't be like a natural sheep instinct either. It would be grazing or something. So Tucker, Henry, and Experience find that Mike's room has been ransacked. Who's Mike again?
I don't know. He's just like somebody who works on the farm.
It is honestly the same way that I felt about the guy in The Birds Who Died.
Yeah.
It's very similar where they just, you know, go in and they just see something has happened to Mike. He is gone.
I thought there were a lot of similarities actually to The Birds.
Yeah, it definitely like made me feel like we chose the right title of Animals Run Amok. It's not the same thing as animal. It's like there are many of them.
Yes.
And they are causing a ruckus. I just love the way you wrote this. They discover that Mike is no more.
Oh, yeah.
So there's also a zombie sheep butting against the door who breaks through, even though Tucker shoots it. Outside Mike's house, there's a milling of sheep. Henry is just out of his mind, traumatized and scared. And Experience tries to talk him down, talking about his basal chakra and whatnot. It's like, I know this movie came out in 2006. So I think her character makes sense. Like all the jokes, like, okay, yeah, this would be kind of the thing. But they just come off as kind of stupid. Like, she just kind of really comes across as like a Kristen Bell to me. And I just feel like they put Kristen Bell in a tie-dye t-shirt and she was like, that's groovy, man. Like, that's exactly how it feels.
Yeah, but I mean, all the stuff, you know, I mean, we know people like this, though.
This is true. So. I feel like it could have been done better.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember in 6 Feet Under, Lisa?
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like she did that very well.
Uh-huh.
Like, the crazy over-the-top, like... she was even anti-vax, that character.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's one point where, like, you know, she's always talking about, like, feng shui and chakras and, like, balancing her hormones and just, like, all these kind of hippy-dippy things. But there's one point where I think she's like, oh, my God, that actually worked. I think it might be this part where she's like, you know, she's like, you're totally calm and you're growing roots into the ground and you're totally... relaxed. She goes, I'm totally relaxed. And she goes, oh my God, that worked. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. They're like, it's cute. It's cute. As they drive away, a zombie sheep attacks Tucker as he's driving and bites him through his boot. The trio jumps out of the truck right before it goes over the cliff. And I fucking love this scene because the sheep then gets in the car and it looks like the sheep is driving as it goes over the cliff. And you just have this like fake sheep just like sitting behind the wheel. 10 out of 10. Like, I replayed that shot. I thought it was so funny. Just as it goes off. But this is very traumatizing because that's actually the cliff that Henry's dad fell off to his death. This movie is so absurd. And sometimes I really don't like horror comedies. Like, sometimes they just feel like the horror is there for like shock value.
Mm-hmm.
But genuinely, I thought this was so funny. And, you know, I thought it was mostly funny. But I even liked the story though. Like, it was so absurd that I thought it was great.
Yeah.
So the three are now pretty far away with no truck. Angus is setting up for the auction and we see that the cabbie fell asleep and the meter has now reached $1,000. So outside, a scientist has emptied another cooler into the offal pit. What is that like? What does offal mean?
I think it means meat scraps.
Yeah, because it really is just like a hole
that
they just throw viscera into.
Yeah.
Gross. He's attacked by a sheep. Grant wanders and becomes more rabid by the second. Angus comes upon him and Grant bites his hand, but Angus quickly gets away. Experience then lectures Tucker about, you know, the whole being a farmer thing. And they then discover that his foot has been transformed into a hoof. And then they are chased by a flock. They end up at the laboratory, which Henry had thought was abandoned. When they come in, they find a skinned sheep creature that is, its heart is hooked up to electrodes. And I thought this was super grim. Like, it's still alive. Like, it begins twitching. Like, that truly was grim and upsetting to me.
Yeah.
This place is just creepy and weird. One of the scientists sedates Tucker. And, you know, they're trying to explain that, like, the sheep are going, you know, buck wild, and they just don't believe them. Which I thought was, like, these scientists are so... How do they not know, like, how this stuff works?
Well, I know, but the female scientist does seem to know because of something that happens later. But I just wanted to say, if you ever are in a building with that, like, clear plastic, like, strips of stuff that, like, that functions as, like, a wall, you know it's going to be bad.
My old job, I had to go through
one. No, really? Oh, God.
You want to know something so stupid? I mean, those things are there for, like, contamination. If you work with, like, my old job, they were doing a lot of microculture stuff, which is just, like, you're literally working basically with, like, petri dishes, let's say. So if a little bit of contamination gets there, your whole thing's fucked. But then they just should have shut down during COVID, but they didn't because, you know, of course, why would they do that? So they just pinned up those flappy thingies, and then there was a bunch of contamination in the lab. Just, like, so stupid. Anyway, scientists can be dumb. In fact, I would say most of them are. So this is actually realistic. So Henry and Experience escape the lab, but then are chased by a flock of sheep to the offal pit. Henry, Angus then comes up upon them, and Henry says, hey, the deal is off, and rips the check up, and then falls into the pit with Experience. But before he actually goes in there, he is begging for Angus to help him, saying, I'm your brother. And Angus says, that's the thing about farms. Accidents happen. And then, you know, fucking scars him over the side.
So cold.
So cold. This guy is just crazy.
So for a second, I thought, did he push his dad over the cliff? But no.
Yeah, I guess he wasn't there.
Yeah.
But he would have.
Yeah, probably.
Experience lights a scented candle. That is funny.
That is pretty funny.
Scented. And Henry says that there are underground caves that they can try to find. Oh, yeah. And they've fallen just up on top of a bunch of viscera.
I mean, I know it's all whatever.
I mean, it's still gross.
Practical effects or whatever. But I was like, I mean, just like the haggis thing later, I was like, oh, my God. Like, it's so disgusting. Just like all this meat.
It's so much.
So gross. And they fall, like, face first into it.
Of course. There's a game that you probably wouldn't want to play, but I really like it. And I always think about it with movies like this. It's called Viscera Cleanup Detail. And it's so good. Because there's no, like, there's no dialogue or anything. You're just a worker, and you just have to clean up this place. There's blood, guts, you know, so you have to take, you know, all the stuff, put it into like an incinerator, mop things up, but you have to clean out the mop bucket because it gets full with blood, a bunch of stuff like that. But then you can kind of find out what the story was based off of how they like set it up. And there's also some letters left behind. One of them was a bit too grim for me because it was like the whole plot I could tell was this was like an office space somehow, and all of the employees striked, so they just killed them all. Like, and oh, I really was like, I don't know if I can finish this one. It's bumming me out too much. But there's ones of like, oh, these people were experimenting, because sometimes there's alien bits too. You know, they're experimenting, and experiment got loose. So it's a fun game. Mm-hmm. So yeah, above they can see the sheep are sniffing and peering into the pit. A rogue sheep then chases Henry and Experience. Henry kicks back at it and throws the scented candle on it, and it burns up. And then he's the one who can comfort Experience. So then Mrs. Mack is really making something vile in the kitchen, really fucking it up. Angus is sweaty and pale. And when she asks where Henry is, he's like, I don't know. Henry and Experience then emerge from the caves, and they gaze on the beautiful vista that is the farm. They clear up, you know, their nastiness with an outside nozzle and hear someone cheering inside the building. When they go in, it's a mammoth sheep who's wearing Grant's bag. And this just must be so traumatic for Henry. Like, this is just a recreation, but worse. The Grant thing kicks Henry across the room. There's a little bit of a chase scene, but Experience and Henry escape, but then realize that Tucker is in trouble. I'm so glad that they helped Tucker. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know the full context, but isn't it like also canonical that he's like an indigenous person to New Zealand? So I don't know. I was just so glad that they like didn't just, you know, kill him off. Like,
I do really like the, I didn't copy down the dialogue, but I do really like the part where she's lecturing, you know, him about his culture and his oppression. He's like, did you learn all that in college before you dropped out? So great.
He's so good. When we see Tucker, he's almost fully transformed, but the scientist lady shoots Tucker up with some amniotic fluid and he transforms back. So she got that figured out pretty fast. The scientist realizes that if Angus transforms into a sheep, he can't sell off the farm. Meanwhile, Angus is struggling through his speech as he's, you know, talking about the new frontiers that they're going to. When there's a scientist that emerges from the lab to check things out and sees that several of her colleagues have been munched on by sheep. It really is a zombie moment. They're just kind of like, you know, it is like if you just happened upon some zombies, they're just chewing up. She tries to escape into the woods, but falls into the mud and is attacked and eaten by sheep. The prize sheep in the box that Angus wants to display is revealed. It is very beautiful. It's like white and, you know, looks very neat and tidy, shorn. It bleats ominously, and Miss Mac is disturbed by the sound. Suddenly, a whole flock of sheep come stampeding down the hill and attack the guests at Angus's auction. Angus's hand then is transformed into a hoof, and he's not attacked because he's one of them. Mm-hmm. There's also some really nasty detail on his hand. There is a moment earlier where he talks to one of the scientists, and she's like, what is that? He's like, one of the things bit me. And she just kind of, like looks at it, or he asked for like a shot or something, and she's like, you'll be fine.
Right, that's what I mean. Like, she knows that
she needs, so then okay, I got you.
But I don't know if it was in that moment, but there was some moment where she's like, I've helped you all this time, and I helped fund all your research and all your extracurricular activities, and apparently he's into fucking sheep. So, and that's explored a little later. And I was kind of like, do we really have to go there? But I guess
I don't know if we did.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, I don't think I realized that until right now.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of confused. Like, I was kind of confused watching it. So now that makes sense. Mrs. Mack rescues Experience and Henry in her car because she's a badass. At the office, Angus and his prize sheep. I see now. Yeah. They share a tender moment. The Grant creature attacks Henry, but he throws mint sauce on him and tries to load the gun.
That was pretty funny. Because the mint sauce like kind of sizzles when it hits his flesh and stuff, which it does obviously doesn't really do, but I thought that was really funny.
Experience thrusts a shish kebab rod into the Grant thing, which causes him to fall down. Parasite, did you steal this?
Wait, what? Parasite?
Because she puts the shish kebab into...
Oh, right. But here it's an acupuncture pressure point.
Yeah, because then he falls down.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. Bong, you know, you have some things to answer for. That night, the sheep gather outside of the house, and Mrs. Mack, Experience, and Henry barricade the doors and windows.
Similar.
Very similar to the birds. I do like your comment here. Ew. Period. Angus is in his underwear smoking a cigarette. He does look just like things are not going well. Henry announces that he is taking back the farm and aims his gun at the sheep, the prize sheep. Angus reveals that the way he has made advances is using human DNA. And everybody's very like, oh, you sick bastard. And even though the sheep are breaking in, he doesn't feel like he's in danger. Henry realizes that he has been bitten, but armed with encouragement from Mrs. Mack, the Golden Shears Award, and the rifle, he sends Experience and Mrs. Mack away.
Yeah, Angus says something like, you can't shoot her. She's family. So he's created this sheep with his own DNA, and then he's also fucked the sheep.
Like, that's so... See, I understood that it was his DNA, so I was like, oh, he's just, like, a weirdo. But, like, I didn't realize that part.
No, I think that's what the cigarette and the being in his underwear is supposed to symbolize.
Oh! I just saw that and I was like, well, he just got hot and felt like smoking, I guess, because he's transforming. I'm like 26. How can I be this like, oh, I guess just my brain was like, well, that wouldn't even come up, you know, because you wouldn't do that. But you're right. This movie went a little bit too far.
Usually I'm the sweet summer child, but.
Do you remember we were watching 30 Rock when I was a kid and there's like a joke where there's people keep saying things that rhyme with cunt. But they don't actually say it. And yeah. There's a part where this lady's got a bunch of kittens and one of them's called Runt. And she's like, Runt. And I was laughing. And you were like, do you know what that word means? I was like, what? I just was laughing because the cat was so cute.
I love that.
You were like, do you know the C word? I was like, crap. Christ.
moving on.
Henry decides he's gonna blend in by donning the sheepskin seat covers of Mrs. Mech's car. So funny. He fends off the advances of an amorphous sheep by stabbing it with the golden shears.
Amorous.
Because it does try to hump him, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Angus starts up the airplane and is going to take his sheep with him to the outside world, but he starts to transform. So he then attacks Henry, and Henry thrusts the Golden Shears Award into his neck. In a nod to An American Werewolf in London, Angus's snout extends from his face. Yeah, I definitely was like, this is a cool little, you know, homage. Outside, the airplane inexplicably... I'll go with it. Starts to move across the field. A herding dog subdues Angus, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, just I like it.
Doesn't seem to understand why he can't move now. Henry realizes that if he does nothing, the airplane will drive into Angus and chop him up with the propeller, which it does. But the Angus thing still arises, so Tucker shoots him because he's back, and then hits Henry up with the fluid so that he won't transform. The men become fully human again, but Angus is too eaten up by the airplane propeller. He wanders towards the sheep and is then torn asunder, dick first, for his crimes, I guess.
I guess, yes.
The sheep have been farting up a storm, so Henry throws a lit lighter into the group and a huge explosion ensues. The next morning, Tucker and Henry are injecting the rest of the sheep people with the antidote. I do love this scene because they're like all corralled,
yeah.
Like, you know, like an animal just getting a shot. Experience Henry Tucker and Mrs. Mac are going to have a go at organic farming. The camera then lands on a dog, a sheep dog, who bleats.
I know.
At the end.
That made me laugh out loud. I was like, what?
I love it because like it just is a dog like barking and they just dubbed that in.
I know, it's so stupid.
It's so good.
Then there was like one little bit there where they're giving Experience some quote mountain oysters.
Yeah.
They're like, you can eat them if you're a vegetarian, and it turns out that they're sheep testicles. So she spits them out. Ha ha.
Well, Mom, what is that fear?
Well, it's a phenophobia, of course. It's a fear of sheep.
I don't have that.
I love sheep.
I would love to hug one.
Me too.
They're so cute.
I really want to hug a cow.
Damn, there's so much trivia here. Devising everything from conceptual art to buckets of gore, sculpted body parts, and sophisticated prosthetic makeups, a highly experienced Weta Workshop crew came together to build writer-director Jonathan King's distinctive vision of Kiwi bucolic bliss turned monstrously on its head. It was so beautifully written. The scene with the sheep driving the Land Rover took several days to film. The scene with the Land Rover going off the cliff was done in one take. Wow. Okay. Director Jonathan King did a lot of noises for the Grant Sheep Monster. It took four people to operate the Grant Monster sheep suit. Tammy Davis stayed and worked on a farm as researched for his role as Tucker. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What a guy.
What a guy.
When Mrs. Mack prepares a haggis, she recites the opening lines of Address to a Haggis by Robert Burns. Haggis is traditionally made using a sheep's heart, liver, lungs, and stomach.
No, thank you.
I mean, I guess it's great that people devised a way to use the whole animal, but I'm a weak American, and even the idea of eating a sheep seems like I don't know if I could do it.
A flock of over 1,000 animals, a small number of trained sheep, and animatronic puppet creatures created by the world-renowned Weta Workshop were captured in camera to bring the rampant underbelly of ovine rage in this movie to life on the big screen. The number of sheep that appeared in the opening wide shots, according to writer-director Jonathan King on the film's audio commentary, was 852.
Wow. I do like that you have in here, because I noticed it too, the Wilhelm scream.
Yes. Keep it.
At 1 hour, 2 minutes, while the people at Angus's speech are attacked by the sheep, two men try to get into a car. The one on the driver's side is pulled down by a sheep and screams. Honestly, sometimes I'm like, do people just put that in there to have a laugh?
I guess
like,
so.
Because the movie that we watched the other day also, Nanny, there's like a sound, it must be a free sound that people can get of a child laughing that is just burned into my mind. And I heard it in one of the scenes.
Oh.
Like, it's something that people use in like crowd shots of kids laughing. But I never know why, because now for me, it takes me out. Because I'm like, well, I've heard this in literally 1 million other movies.
Wow. You'll have to point it out next time. If you want to jump to Letterboxd, it's okay.
Well, what does Letterboxd have to say about it? Jay Koch gave it 5 stars. I watched this on a whim, and I loved every minute. It's the sheep equivalent of Brain Dead / Dead Alive. Goofy, gory, and full of kiwis. I do really want to watch Brain Dead.
I do too. I don't know if it's available, but we should look for it for sure.
We should find it. Alvaro, who loves aliens, gave it 5 stars. My kind of shit. For real, I am so grateful I watched this movie. I loved everything about it. I liked the characters. The special effects looked awesome. And there were some very funny moments. Plus, New Zealand is absolutely beautiful. Big agree. I would love to go.
Me too.
Gory, silly, and fun, very wholesome, and there's an epic frenzy rampage scene. Lovely. A tiny piece of dialogue that cracked me up. What about the sheep? Well, fuck the sheep. No time for that, bro. Sarah gave it 5 stars and said, extremely funny 2000s cheese fest. Got that perfect level of dry humor and awesome practical effects. Most fun I've had watching a movie in a while. The scene where the sheep drives the truck off the cliff. So awesome. I love movies. XOXO Burfin gave it 5 stars. There's nothing so fearsome as the revolt of a sheep. It's true. Fatpie42 gave it 5 stars. Has a very similar feel to Peter Jackson's early splatter horror movies, Brain Dead and Bad Taste, except the monsters are sheep. And somehow the sheep are genuinely horrifying, even while the film pokes fun at its own bizarre concept. Both terrifying and hilarious, this is definitely one of the better horror comedies. Do you see what I have to deal with?
Brenwyn's like looking at you so earnestly, like, what are you doing, human? Is this She's how you want start. To spend your time?
Yes.
Instead of worshiping me.
Barry John Evans gave it 0.5 star and said on the front cover, it says, if you enjoyed Shaun of the Dead, this is sheer enjoyment. Well, Shaun of the Dead is one of my favorite movies. A black sheep is shit.
Whoa.
Wow. Oriwa gave it 1 star, said this movie is so boring, it actually encouraged me to write my essay.
Aww.
Well, you know what? Good for you. Noah Arbor gave it 1 star. Unfortunately, it's one of the films where the funniest part of it is its concept. The actual execution is rather boring and unfunny. Shame.
Shame.
Jess gave it 1 star and said this felt like a bad Doctor Who episode.
Nah. But you would not believe how many bad jokes are in the Letterboxd reviews.
Oh, God, I can only imagine. How would we rate it? Jars of baby sheep?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. 3.5?
I'm going to give it 4.
Oh, wow.
I really liked it.
Good. Yeah. I mean, the special effects, the practical effects are pretty good. And that Grant dude, he did so excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was cute. And like, I really don't think I ever would have watched it had we not done the podcast, because I think movies like this, I always think they're going to be bad.
Yeah.
But I really liked it. And I would watch it again also. In fact, I think I should watch it again, because maybe I just didn't watch it as closely as I should have the first time.
There are a lot of funny moments. What have we learned? Well, one thing is, you know, if someone is an evil kid.
Watch out.
They might.
Hey, if somebody's chopping up and skinning their brother's favorite sheep,
Aww. Can
we keep an eye on that kid?
Jeez, so sad.
One of my friends growing up, her dad was from Iran, and he told me a story once of, I mean, you know how it's going to end. He had a favorite goat that he loved so much, and one day he came home and the goat was gone, and they made him into food. And he did not know until he was eating it already. Can you imagine? Like, can we just be a little bit kinder to kids? Like, can we just be a little bit kinder? At least let them know, hey, don't get too attached. We're going to eat that thing.
Yeah, that would be the humane thing to do. That's so sad.
I know. Do you have a favorite scene? Or kill.
I like it when Grant eats the bunny.
You love Grant.
I do love Grant. I think he was really strong.
He was fun. I think mine is just the massive sheep attack scene. I love chaos. I love scenes where, like, you know, zombies of any sort are just attacking everybody.
Yeah, we didn't talk about it, but people are like, you know, getting their arms eaten off, and they're getting their guts eaten out of their tummies. And I guess there was an amputee person who was one of the actors who had, like, you know, an amputated arm or something.
Yeah, because there's one scene where this guy's like trying to hit the sheep with his own arm?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I just, you know, I just having your guts like eaten out of you is it's one of my top fears. And there are a couple of people that we land on, and
it's scary because sheep, that is like their height, their head level.
Yeah,
you know,
but when they come over the hill, I mean, it's just like you just hear this like stampede, and then they just they do that kind of like whirling thing that they do just like down the hill and onto the group of people, and it's like, ugh.
It's like, even if they weren't bloodthirsty, even like that stampede coming towards you would be so scary.
Totally. Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's so many of them. Who wins the You Fool Award? Well, I guess the science has gone too far.
But also Grant, I think, when he runs headlong, you know, into the laboratory and he grabs that.
Yeah. That was foolish.
Very foolish.
But that, I feel like it would have happened eventually.
Yeah,
you know, true. He just sped up the process.
That's true. that kind of evil lady scientist kind of.
She's a fool.
Yeah, for sure. She's kind of evil and craven.
Yeah.
So she bit it. I don't know if they transformed her back or anything, but.
They shouldn't.
No.
You can stay like this.
Yeah, so that's our Animals Run Amok episode, Wohos.
These were fun.
I thought so, too.
Like, even the birds, I like movies that I am confused, or, like, movies that make me go, what the fuck?
No, it was so funny when you were texting me, you know, and then I, like, read the texts out to Quinn and stuff. It was just really so fun. Thank you for joining us for this episode and for all your support. It means the world of horror to us, truly. Next time, Mom's Picks involve zombies. We will be looking at 28 Days Later from the UK and 28 Weeks Later from the US. We would welcome your support in the form of a 5-star review or thumbs up on your preferred listening platform, but we will settle for you telling all your friends all about us. Mac, what do you have going on?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr at Macaritaville, where I post my art, and I would love for you to look at it.
Tee-hee. We are getting a lot of new international listeners, and I'm so happy that you found us, however you found us, through YouTube or through Instagram or through a friend. Very happy for all your support, all the new wohos out there. And remember, we love you. And don't go into the basement.